Alan Dooley, and I'm standing here on behalf of the Director General for Transport, who has extended his apology. And my duty this morning is to take you through the ratification of the Hazardous and Noxious Substance by Sea Convention. It is an IMO convention, and South Africa is a member of that organization, and also as a littoral state, has an option to ratify the convention. The convention is not enforced as yet, and hence the reference to ratification. So, in the presentation that I'm making, I will be dealing with the purpose of the convention, giving the background, the definition and exclusions, which is important to highlight, but also to take you through as to how the system within the convention is meant to work. And also then I'll touch on the operation of the NHS fund and the contributions thereof to the fund, and what kind of matters that the fund in terms of scope would apply to. But also I'll share some information on the on our own legislative framework and what would then be the implications for the ratification of the convention. And I'll deal with the consultation that we have undertaken, and then the actual recommendation to your subcommittee, Mr. Chairman. To start off on the purpose of the presentation is to request the NCOP Subcommittee on Economic and Business Development to take note of the presentation of the HNS, the Harmful Noxious Substance by Sea Convention, the 2010, and to then request the approval from this committee that the Republic can ratify this convention. The background to it, I think it takes us back to 1996, when the primary convention was adopted by the diplomatic conference of the IMO, and this was subsequently then amended later in 2010. And so the amendment was in the form of a protocol, and it is the protocol that we are putting it to the subcommittee for support to ratify. And the convention itself aims to ensure adequate, prompt, and effective compensation for damage to persons and property, cost of cleanup and reinstatement measures, and economic losses caused by the maritime transport of hazardous and noxious substances. The HNS cargoes themselves include bulk solids, liquids including persistent and non-persistent oils, liquefied gases, and in the form of the liquefied natural gas, and as well as the LPG and packaged substances. The context in which the convention defines HNS cargoes is that it is based on a list of individual substances identified in a number of IMO conventions and codes, and designed to ensure maritime safety and prevention of pollution by these types of cargoes. And there are also a large number of substances covered by the convention, such as those under the IMDG code, which South Africa is party to, and a number of other products that are in package form listed under the IMDG code. It excludes some of the bulk solids such as coal and iron ore and oil pollution damage from tankers, because some of these are covered by other conventions that the country has signed up to, notably the IOPC funds. On how it works, it establishes a two-tier regime in a single treaty to provide compensation for loss or damage to persons, property, and environment arising from the carriage of the H&S cargoes by sea. So the first year of competition is paid by the ship owner. So the ship owner takes in insurance, and then the second tier of competition is paid by the H&S fund, which is a fund established by the convention itself. This is when, in the cases when the ship owner liability is insufficient to cover costs of damages, and or the ship owner is exonerated from liability, or is financially unable to meet his or her obligations. And this second tier kicks in to compensate. How then the H&S fund is envisaged to operate? Here we highlight that it is modeled similar to the IOPC fund, which we have ratified as a country in 2005, and it is governed by an assembly of member states. And the functions of the assembly itself is to deal with the scope of definition of the contributing cargoes. As new cargoes come in, the assembly would make a determination as to whether these would fall under the scope of the convention. And also it deals with the implementation of the convention, with particular reference to calculation of levies and the contribution mechanism for domestic trade. H&S is also administered by a secretariat. I think it's similar to the IOPC funds, and the head of the secretariat is the director, who is responsible, among other things, on the assessment of payment of claims for compensation, and also of receiving reports of contributing cargo and levy contributions from cargo owners. In terms of the contributions to the H&S fund, which the convention creates, here we'll like to highlight that the compensation payments made by H&S will be financed by contributions levied on persons who have received within a calendar year contributing cargo after sea transport in a member state. So there must have been an import of these cargoes into the country that you would then be liable to pay the contributions to the fund. But also each contributor is therefore levied in proportion to the quantities of H&S cargoes that he has received in that particular country. However, cargo is not considered to be contributing cargo so long as it is in transit, provided the cargo is not imported, consumed, or transformed. H&S funds compensation payments will be made post the event, so there must be an event first and then claims lodged. Compensation may be spread over several years depending on the size of the claim that is under consideration. In terms of scope, the kind of issues that are covered by the compensation regime, they include loss of life or personal injury, loss of or damage to property outside the ship carrying H&S, and economic losses, cost of preventive measures, cleanup, and reasonable measures of its reinstatement of the environment to the state it was, or close to the state it was before the incident. It also applied to damage caused by the H&S in the territory, including the territorial sea of a state party. And it also applies to damage caused outside the territory and the territorial sea of any state. In terms of where we are, the current protection, limited protection we have in our legal system is that South Africa is a state party to the conventions dealing with other prevention, with other type of incidents, oil from ships not to pollution management from other sources such as H&S. So it's only oil that we have cover for in the instrument, the IOPC funds. And South Africa is also a state party to MARPOL, the CLC, and the IOPC funds, and those conventions have been translated to national law, and we then highlight the pieces of legislation that give effect to these conventions. And the Marine Pollution and Control Civil Liability Act of 1981, ship owners are only liable to about 120 million. So that is the current limit that we have. But with the HNS, the limits are much higher than what we have here. And there should there be any major HNS spillage, the cleanup operation and the rehabilitation of marine environment will be funded by the government. So in the absence of us ratifying the being parties to the HNS, the government is then exposed to then funding any incident and the damage thereof. So then I think this has highlighted the importance of us ensuring that we are parties to the convention as early as possible. We have, I think, in our journey to yourself, to your committee, we've had consultations with the state law advisors, both from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation and the Department of Justice, and both have confirmed that this is not in conflict with our international and domestic law practice and obligations. That the convention was also consulted with the Treasury, Department of Mineral Resources, the industry in the form of SAPIA from the Maritime Law Association of South Africa, and our pollution prevention partner in the form of Smit Amanda Marine and the Chemical and Industry Association, CIA, and as well as our agency, the South African Maritime Safety Authority. We have also, in our journey here, have made a presentation to your sister committee, the Portfolio Committee on Transport, and the recommendation then that we have put forward to your committee on Honourable Dyson is for your committee to approve that the country ratifies this this convention. And this concludes our presentation. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Madam President. We are going to be allowing members to pose questions to you so that you can be able to empower them in terms of what they are seeking clarity on from the presentation. And if you think that there are some issues that are lacking from the presentation, please raise them. I see the hand, Honorable Faba. Is there any other hand? Honorable Makue and Honorable Dikali. Honorable Faba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you also for the very short, it's actually not short presentation. I don't think there's a lot to actually ask on this. What I just need to understand, on this, it is a noxious substance, as we know it now as HNS convention. Will oil now also then, because oil used to be on its own, I see, oil spillage, will oil now also then fall under the HNS convention? Thank you.
Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. We welcome the...
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the presentation. My concern is related to the one raised by Honorable Faber, but I want to put it differently, where we would want to hear from you, sir, whether you, in the Department of Transport, feels that we are adequately covered in terms of any other spillages that are not mentioned in this protocol that we need to ratify here. That's the one question. My second question is related to the capacity of our government to monitor and ensure that this protocol would be respected. The background, Chair, mentioning that is when we've had the recent experience of ships illegally fishing on our shores, and the oceans are big, and we are looking at extending the ocean's economy, but they still manage to get away. I don't think I need to go into detail on that. We all know the circumstances. So my question is that, do we have the capacity? Because if we don't, then you may put an onus on us to then look as legislatures at how such capacity can be built. Thank you, Chair.
Makoshi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I might sound a little bit out of the topic, but I am from the rural province, rural province of Limpopo, where we don't even have a sea.
But you have Limpopo River.
We have a river, but you won't find this type of you won't find this type of transport in that particular river, Manarashi. Firstly, I want to join my colleague here in welcoming the presentation, and also to say upfront that I want to approve the ratification of the convention. On how it works, I can see we have three bullets there on how it works. I really want to check if ever it can also happen on the road transport that we are using in Limpopo, because normally we'll have those cars going to an exit, and the little that I know will be paid to the owner through the road accident fund. But I really want to check. I am touched by this one, whereby they're saying the second tier compensation is paid by the HNS fund when the ship owner's liability is insufficient to cover cost of damages. And also this one whereby they're saying the first tier compensation is paid by the ship owner or his or her insurer. So I want to check if ever I'm shifting it to our type of transport. Is it also happening like this?
You seem to be lost, my chief.
No, not really.
Oh,
I'm not.
Oh, okay.
It's a fact because I'm out of the topic.
No.
Honorable Father, can we allow Honorable Makui, and then you'll be there.
Okay.
Just two follow-ups before we answer Baba.
Chair, just a brief addition. Can the Department of Transport also tell us what is happening in the situation of other SADC member states, in particular in Mozambique, Angola, and Namibia? What is their position on the protocol, if it's possible? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Father.
Chairperson, thank you. Just on that first question of mine, because the reason I'm asking that is, it states, as you read through your presentation about the oil, that it did not put the other dump toxics and whatever inside, so now you're bringing it in.
Yeah.
But then, on the, if you also look, it actually says oil pollution damage from tankers at the point in the Civil Liability Convention. It does not apply to that. Now this is what I don't understand. Why is that not then included then? And then it also says the convention applies to any damages caused in the territory, including the territorial sea of a state party. It also applies to damage by contamination of the environment caused in the exclusive economic zone of a state party, established in accordance with international law. If you also can tell me what that means, because you must understand, I have no idea what that clause 5.3 means. If you can explain that to me, I'll also appreciate it. Thank you.
Honorable Mchimunya.
Thank you, sir. Your slide number 9 on the contributions to the HNS fund. Your fine print there, under bullet number 1, contributions levied on persons who have received in a calendar. I don't understand that. If you can expand on that point, I don't understand it. And the second point I want to The second question I want to raise is around the very contributions. Are member states liable for contribution to this fund? If so, if South Africa does contribute to this fund, how much pay financial aid?
That was the first round, Volunteer. We can try to, as far as possible, try to respond.
Yeah. No, thank you very much, Excellency, and honourable members for the questions. I think the questions are they help, I think, to give us an opportunity to clarify the treaty is structured and how at the country will interact with it. It is correct that the treaty closes a gap that was I think that has been existing. Oil is covered, so any pollution caused by oil spillage is covered. It is covered by the International Oil Pollution Compensation Fund. So there is an international fund to which member states and also who are parties to the convention can claim. South Africa ratified the IOPC funds in 2005, and we have domesticated that treaty. It is now law in South Africa, and contributions are paid to that fund to cover us in the event of an incident, an oil pollution incident. So we are covered. So the reason why then there's a separation is just to close that gap, to now look at these specialized types of cargoes, which are NHS cargoes, which are mainly chemicals, both in package form and you'd recall that I said the fund itself is structured along the same lines as the IOPC fund,
yeah,
to which the country is a member of. Okay. Yeah. Now the second question related whether we have capacity, whether we have capacity as a country to ensure that the treaty and its provisions are implemented or are protected. For the reason that at this stage we are not parties to the convention. So by becoming a part of it, there will be an obligation on that. The first obligation is on, in terms of our constitution, to domesticate the treaty, to make it law in South Africa. So what would then follow the ratification process once the convention comes into force would be to then develop an appropriate legislation to make it law in South Africa. In terms of capacity, we already have historic capacity for the reasons that what we are now doing is more similar to the process we followed with the IOPC fund. So we would need to decide as a country whether we would adopt the methodology of collecting from the HNS cargo importers in the country, because it's not the state that pays, but it's the importance of cargoes. So like in the oil IOPC funds, it is the oil importers that pay the levy to the IOPC fund. But the methodology that we have adopted as a country is that the oil importers would provide, also there's a requirement that by the South African Revenue Service to collect or to receive reports, oil import reports to South African Revenue Service, and then they are forwarded to the IOPC Secretariat, on the basis of which they generate an invoice to the country, and then the oil importers would then be billed by the South African Revenue Service. of the amount that they should pay, and then on collecting, once the entire amount is collected, it is then paid over by South Africa to the IOPC Fund Secretariat, and the headquarters is in London. So the same, it will then depend whether we adopt the same system of collection or another system. But we would, as a department, advise that we adopt the more or less the same system of collecting and paying over to the IOPC Fund. So that then would then, in terms of capacity, all what would be required to do would be to inspect the vessels that are calling in South African ports as to whether they've got on board the HNS certificate, insurance certificate on board those vessels, to ensure to determine as to whether they are covered. So it will be a requirement for all ships coming into South Africa that they must have on board an HNS certificate of compliance, ensuring that they've got insurance as they bring the HNS cargoes. But it will also put an obligation on importers to ensure that carriers of their cargoes are HNS compliant. Like in all international treaties, a treaty applies to parties to it. So there would be there will be a challenge on non-parties, because you would not obligate, but there may be, in terms of the national legislation, there may be a special dispensation that we may have to look into to ensure that non-parties have an equivalent to what they would be obliged to provide were they members of the HNS fund. So there will be a mechanism to how to deal with that. And there is a slight difference with the example of the illegal fishing, because there the instrument is of the rights to fishing exploration rests with another department. But in terms of the surveillance, I think we have, although there are some the challenges we do have, I think there are various security agencies like the Navy who have the capability. SAMHSA also is building the capability of surveillance to ensure that we know what traverses our waters. Then the other related question was on whether as to what is happening in SADC. I think the countries in Southern Africa would always take a cue from South Africa. So they would say, if South Africa has ratified, we would as well ratify. So there's no Southern African country has ratified the treaty as yet, because it is a new treaty. In terms of IMO standards, it's still a new treaty. It takes longer for it to be ratified. But by ratifying it as South Africa, we would then be sending a message to SADC, but not only SADC, I think the entire continent, on the need to have a ratification of the treaty as it comes into force. What ends up on the road in many cases would have, if it's an import, it would have gone through the port system. The treaty does not cover the road or other modes of transportation of hazardous cargo. There are other systems that my colleague would deal with that question in a short while. Let me just finish those that speak to the treaty in question. Now, on slide number 9, those who have received this refers to importers. So if you are an importer of HNS cargo, so it means you have received the HNS cargo through an import, so you are liable for payment of the levies to the IOPC, to the HNS fund. Then I'd like Mr. Dimogwan to deal with the question relating to the road transport element.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning, members, and our apologies for coming late. We have a just came from the portfolio committee wherein we are dealing with another legislation and the act, which I think is still going to come to this committee. In reference to the question that was posed, from what normally happens is that we have the National Road Traffic Act, which binds all operators to be registered. For instance, in this case, oil spillage or oil will be classified under dangerous goods or hazardous substances. So they will need to be registered. But in this case, the point of departure of the Act is with regards to how we regulate the environment, because as an operator, you are then expected to adhere to the regulations of the National Road Traffic Act with reference to what you are supposed to carry, what you are required to carry, what you are registered to carry, and in what quantity or capacity. This, again, is largely informed, you probably honorable members might be aware that around 1988, the state then deregulated the transportation of hazardous substances from the rail environment because of the intention not to continue investing in rail. So the road transport was then opened. So what the 1996, what the National Road Traffic Act tried to do was to try and address them, but from a perspective of regulating the environment as what is expected of yourself as an operator. And it is expected that you are then required from whoever that will maneuver your vehicle in transportation of such goods, they need to be aware of what needs to become of themselves when you transport this good. But in terms of whether there's funding for, in fact, as an operator, you're required to comply. In fact, there's a fine to yourself as an operator if you do not adhere to the requirements that you're supposed to according to the Act on the transportation of the goods. Thank you.
So, I think there's one question that I think I did not deal with, and that refers to the definition of the exclusive economic zone. So just by way of an illustration, the ocean environment is broken into different zones. Let's say four zones. The first from your watermark, from your coast, from your beach, up to 200 nautical miles. That is referred to the economic exclusive zone. And then beyond that, it is the territorial sea, so that you still have rights, and there are some limitations that you may have in the territorial sea. But on the exclusive economic zone, that is your territory. You can do whatever you want to do within the 200 nautical miles. And beyond that, you have the territorial sea. There are some rights and obligations. And beyond that, it's the continental shelf. And then you have certain rights that you enjoy there. Then you have an open sea, where there are limitations in terms of your rights for ships that are not calling in your port, but they are on innocent passage. They would then be excluded because they are not calling in your port and they are not within your economic exclusive zone. Thank you.
Any other follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. On that exclusive economic zone, we do know that there are plans from Transnet now to facilitate repair facilities, both on the east and have what happens when there is a ship stranded at sea and wish to make use of those repair facilities while it is heavily leaking oil or whatever pollutive substance there may be on the ship. Can you just give us some surety that such incidences, which is part of our development paradigm, would not necessarily disadvantage us?
Before you come in, just allow me to follow up on what Brajit was asking earlier on about the issue of how do you, are we going to make sure. I want to assume that I understood him to be saying now that we are ratifying and this is going to be domesticated, we understand that. But he made reference to the issue about how illegal fishing was going. So here in your presentation, you are very explicit about the absence of monetary burden on the state. What I want to assume that Brahidi was asking was that now that we are going to be domesticating, are we also anticipating or are we also building capacity to monitor the implementation of such a treaty? So that you don't ratify when you know that you are it's difficult on your part to monitor. And this is not the first time. The last time we ratified another ILO treaty, but the issue is about how do you then monitor effectively? Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I just need to as well inform members that you would be aware that the country is now engaged in writing a comprehensive maritime transport policy for the country. The absence of a comprehensive maritime transport policy has created a number of uncertainties, which the policy then would close that gap and ensure that there is certainty moving forward. Some of the policy provisions relate to building of capacity for enforcement capacity to exploit the resources that we have, and some of the policy provisions, in a way, they would capture the problems that are already in place through programs like Operation Patisa. Now, the question relating to the port repair facilities that are being developed here, it's one of the opportunities that the country has identified where we have this traffic that is moving around our coast and with no reliable repair facilities within the SADC region. So the positioning of the country to provide state-of-the-art ship repair facilities is to ensure that we use our geographic location to attract the ship repair business into the country. This is not this would not expose South Africa because we have a very long tradition of a buffer that we have created. The department has a standby oil pollution tug that does patrols and ensures that any potential casualties, ship casualties, are detected early to avoid any negative untoward to South Africa. So in most recent times, I think we have been able to deal with potential oil pollution incidents, and we would continue that tradition by ensuring that the services that are being provided by the standby tug that we have employed as the Department of Transport are further enhanced. We are as well, you would see that in our operational business plan of the department, we have a project that which is in partnership with the Treasury, which is looking into the building of a tug that will be designed for the standards of the of our coast, so that we have certainty and assurance that we have all the defense mechanism that we have to protect the country from any ship casualties along our coast. So this would not expose us in any way, and we have systems that are in place, both in terms of legislation and capacity. But I must also just share this information with your members that we are we're engaged in discussions with our sister department, the Department of Environment, to discuss the future arrangement for oil combating along the South African coast, just to make sure that we have systems in place to ensure that in the event of any incident, we are able to deal with it. But we are doing all this being members of the IOPC funds. In the event of all the systems fail, we have an insurance that is guaranteed would be able to protect the Republic in cases where we have been exposed. I don't want to avoid the question. Have I said it?
No, I think part of your matter party what you said also
captured what I was asking.
Okay.
So I'm okay. Thank you, Antulian, your interest. Members, Mamdi Kale also earlier on moved for the acceptance of this ratification. Are we having anybody second in that suggestion that we agree with the ratification of the Fundisi? Thank you so much. Antulian, your delegation, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Fundisi?
Chair, will you allow me to just make three quick requests?
Yes, you can.
Thank you, Jefferson. My one would be to urge the department to develop that comprehensive policy as soon as possible, but to share it with us as well. My second would be, Chair, on the response that we got with regard to the SADC ratification. It was said that other countries follow South Africa, which is not necessarily a good thing. But can we request the department to work closely with the SADC heads of state? I know you can't do it as a department. The head of state does that. But to ensure that such ratification happens. Because, Chair, if there is going to be any pollution in Mozambique, it's going to affect us in Durban. If there's pollution in Angola, it is going to affect us in the West Coast. So the oceans are very dynamic, and we know that normally the water can flow mighty fast from past one country to another. My third point would be, Chair, nothing related to the presentation, but an observation that I have made during the 2.5 months that we have not been here. There's been various meetings of the Department of Transport that were held, important ones, and we were not informed as a select committee about it. So just that information, can we ask you please to convey the request to the Minister and the DG that we get as members of the select committee, or at least our secretary of the select committee, get information about meetings of the Department of Transport so that we don't just see each other or engage each other when we have meetings here, but it helps us as members in terms of our own oversight when there are meetings of the department happening. Some of them that has happened now in the last 2 months, at least two of them were quite important for us to participate in. We're not saying we want to participate. You can use your discretion on that, but we need to get the information.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think voluntarily you would need to answer that. I think it's a some of the issues have just been raised for your attention and also for the DG, so that in moving along we can be able to do things better. Thank you so much. Honourable members, the second part of the agenda today was the discussion of the upcoming oversight visit. In the past we have communicated and we have said that we would want to allow Babantula, are you if you are done you can be able to. It's okay. In the past we agreed that we are going to be visiting Gauteng province, and in particular we would want to see the economic spin-offs that have been happening there, running from your meeting with our National Lottery Board, so that we can be able to understand what is happening there, to DTI, remember the BMW investment in the Roslyn part, remember the small business issues that we want to see there, and also public works in terms of your EPWP. But we have not closed it. Remember, it's coming on the 30th of August until the 4th, until the 2nd, which is about 2 weeks to come. So we are raising it so that we can be able to close the loop on the issues that we want to do. What we have discussed in the past, we have said, we would want to go to one center so that we can be able to see all these issues in taking on the two committees together. We want to assume from where we are sitting that we are still in agreement with that. And we are going to be sharing the proposed program with your good self as members, so that we can be able to close it on time, so that we can be able to know what exactly we are going to be doing. Bra Eddie, do you want to say something before I allow Honorable Fowler?
Yes, Chairperson. I was just trying to check if members, because I don't have a copy of the draft program.
No, I was saying it from what our last discussion was. I was just saying it from what we discussed in the last part to communicate. I don't know if you have it there.
Chair, can I make a request then that when we meet tomorrow, we do have a copy of the draft program?
Chairperson, I would just also like to ask you, I don't know, you first spoke about Bra Eddie and then Comrade Eddie. Now, from what I understand, it is actually Honorable Eddie, but I don't know if this meeting has already been finalized, that this is now like being Bra's cup or what, but in any case. No, just quickly on the DTI one. I was at DTI about a year ago. I did my own personal oversight on myself to just go to the training center of DTI. And I must be quite honest, I walked through their training facility, whatever they have. And to be quite honest, Chairperson, there wasn't a lot going on there at the DTI center on that corner, to be quite honest. I would really suggest that we really go and see at small businesses that is really working instead of going to DTI's offices, because for me that time I went there specifically to see if, for instance, DTI could have video conferencing with us. They do have that facility, by the way. And this is still something that I really believe we must look at. Instead of having people flying up and down here, we said we're going to do it. It's never been done. I think we as international relations trading industry on these two committees of ours should really now, after this elections, all the hype is up and we are now all back to normal. I really believe we must start to be the committee that's in front of all the other committees and show people that we can actually save expenses and do these things. Just going back to the DTI one. And then when we go there, perhaps the BMW seems to be quite a good one from my side and my point of view. But if I can maybe just suggest that going to DTI's offices, I don't know how far it is maybe from other suggestions where we want to do oversight, but that we really spend time on oversight instead of going to the DTI offices where there's really actually nothing going on except people sitting around doing their daily work. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think, Honorable Faber, you are still saying what we are saying. That going to the DTI is not to sit and have report sitting in meetings. We would want to go and see the production phase at BMW, your coaches. Remember, it was reported in our meetings that we are beginning to create coaches in South Africa now. So those are the things that we would want to go and see. But like Honorable Eddie was suggesting, can we allow the program to be before us tomorrow so that we can then close the loop and finalize it? Honorable Eddie.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's important to just inform members that the meeting at the DTI campus is serving two purposes. The one, Honorable Faber, is where we're saying that if we go to BMW, it's going to be important that DTI tells us in our own space what the things are that we need to look for. On my way to the meeting, I met with somebody from the German embassy, the gentleman who normally attends our meetings, and he was saying to me, when you go to BMW, it's going to be important that you look at the training facility, because BMW wants to transfer skills. And it's those type of things that we are hoping we can get from DTI. That's the one part. The second part is then, so that applies to the coaches as well. But our secretaries has done very well in terms of the ideas that we threw into the basket as teams. Because what they have arranged through you, Chair, is that the Human Sciences Research Council would come to the DTI offices and brief us there. They have also arranged that the National Lotteries Board would come to that offices to brief us there. Now, just two things. Why have we decided on those two? The one is that DTI arranged a major indaba in the last 2 months on the manufacturing industry and innovation. And it was exciting to hear what multinational corporations and the business community is doing vis-a-vis automation and the manufacturing industry. Because we all have a position where we say, if we manufacture more, we create more jobs. But what's happening now is you have innovation within the manufacturing industry, which doesn't necessarily always come with more jobs. So we may need to be exposed to that new dynamic. If we just look, by way of example, at the BMW plant, I spoke to someone last week, Saturday, who was working at the plant. And this person is an engineer. And he was saying to me, but you have all these robots that BMW might be using. So there is an element of using human hands, but there is another element of using innovation. And I think it's important for us to have that information beforehand so that when we get to BMW, we can engage with it. Just my final point on that, Chair, is that if we also look at the National Lotteries Board, right? Now that we have been doing local government work, we've had many small NGOs that are doing excellent work in the communities complaining about access to funding. And it's those type of things that we may want to talk to each other about first before we call in the National Lotteries Board to do a presentation from us. The chairperson, as far as I know, of the National Lotteries Board, the National Lotteries Commission, is no, it's gambling tomorrow. No. National Lotteries and gambling are completely different. But then what happens, Chair, is that the term of office of the chairperson is now served 2 terms, and in terms of the act, it can only serve 2 terms. So it may be that within, before the end of the year, we may get a request to say, but how are you going to deal with the appointment of a chairperson of the National Lotteries Commission? So DTI has got to brief us on those things, then let the board come in, because the board is autonomous. Right. I actually thought that we'll go to the National Lotteries Commission offices, which is in Hatfield, and the offices of the DTI campus is in central Pretoria. It's not far from each other, it's about 10 minutes. But I don't know whether it is because the staff is already consulted. We'll hear from Rebecca tomorrow whether it is because they consulted with DTI that that meeting is happening at the DTI offices. So the meeting at the DTI offices is not to meet with DTI, but to prepare us for the oversights in the Tswana area.
Joji? Yeah, I think the latter part I agree with. You know why I'm agreeing with it? A part of my constituency constitutes the motive force in the economic growth of the Tswana area. I think so we need to No. I thought the H does not even have a single word today. So we will reset twice, participation twice. No, are we discussing this tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Can we also include the rejuvenation? Is it rejuvenation or redevelopment of old small industrial park? I think that will be packaged in the DTI report. I've got specific interest where also part of my constituency has got interest, the old Ekandastria industrial park, which is now a white elephant, and I want to believe that DTI have included this as part of their rejuvenation program, if we can get it, and also the old Bagelieri in Amaskra.
We think, George, that we can be able to club whatever that you are suggesting, considering also this, the time and space in between. So that we don't
have this also, so it is in our suburb.
It's a multinational suburb. Honorable Sir.
Yeah, Chairperson, I don't want to talk about election results. I know it's sort of a very sore part for my honourable member there from Tswane, but so I will not go into the facts, as I say, statistics is a bastard at some time. But, Chairperson, while we are now on this and we got both chairpersons here just off that subject, I agree with Honourable Eddie now that definitely I believe that, yes, let's get together then there. At DTI, I was just thinking at that stage that maybe I don't know how it is situated, you know, around the different places that you wanted to visit. So that was why I was just thinking maybe if we could maybe do it at BMW where DTI could be there perhaps, and you know, do the different presentations there so that we don't waste extra time going to DTI, because I don't know how they are situated away from each other. That was the only reason why I actually was thinking on it, but if Honourable Eddie is comfortable with that, it's not a problem. Then just a last question. I know our finance committee, they are apparently on their way on study tours to Mexico and Washington and blah blah blah. I want to know what happened to this both committee study tours. Till today we haven't heard anything. Is there anything taking place? Is there anything in the pipeline? If we can also just be on up to date on something like that. Perhaps off the record if you want to, no problem.
I think, Honorable Faber, we can be able to discuss this further regarding the program. But Roslyn, which is the industrial class, is on the northern part of Pretoria.
Okay.
And the meeting is going to be situated in the CBD of Pretoria.
Okay,
so
DTI should go
No. Pretoria. So the thinking when the preparations were done was that You sit, you get all the presentation, you go out, and when you go out, you see all the programs that you want to see. So we'll then unpack it tomorrow. I think we can be able to do it. Okay. Is it fine? Honorable Eddie.
Chairperson, for three reasons I want to appeal that we don't leave it for tomorrow. The first reason is we have a little bit of time now. It's only 5 past 11. The second reason is, Chair, let us deal with the economic and business development component now. The third reason is, Chair, that if we deal with it now, then by tomorrow it makes it easier for us to finalize.
Okay.
Like the type of questions that's being raised now.
Okay.
One may need to then, using that as an appeal, ask you to rule on that and then allow me to just speak a little bit more on the points that is raised by Honorable Mchilonya.
Can we do this, member? I think we all understand where we are going now. There might be two or three issues of suggestion of amendments. Honorable Mchilonya is explicit on that. I don't know with it might be, I don't know, the secretariat, the practicality of radically changing from Soweto, are the preparations made already? And not yet. So your suggestion was what, Honorable Joshi? So that you are able to mend the central Pretoria with the northern part and what we can be able to do. So that also we can be able to know what is it that we are throwing out and what is it that we are implementing.
Now
he's saying he's very heartbroken now that DA has lost.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I wanted to suggest that at least we cut one part of it. I see Soweto is reported to us. Oh, it's the same day, eh?
Yeah.
It's only different times.
Yeah.
And park station is the same thing. But then, as a fact, I do not need a site visit to this industrial park. But a report, especially, I think it can be extracted from the TTI, because I think they are responsible for that, especially around the issue of Ekandastria. Industrial park and also Babilich industrial park. Yeah.
What is practically, a chair? Would you be amenable to a suggestion that says in the DTI request we should include the two areas that in their report they should also flag on the two revitalization program for the two set programs. And then we leave the program as it is for the latter part of the visit that we intended in Soweto and surrounding locations. Is it fine?
Yes, Chair. I would be happy with that, but I think it might also help our Honorable Mtimunya to say that the visit to Soweto wasn't related to industry, but it was tourism.
Are we members? Can we look into that? If we agree with that, we can then leave it to Secretariat to also, for the better part of the day, check the practicality, and tomorrow they can then tell us what is practical and what is not. Agreed. Honorable George, you are not listening. Agreed, ne? So let's agree with that framework, and then we'll decide it tomorrow. We have two sets of minutes before you, the minutes of the 10th and the 11th of May. I want to assume that members have gone through. Can we start with the 10th of May? Any amendment that you want to suggest? Any suggestion of anything that is not included? Check
just two points there. The one is on the first page. there by the second name. Can they just put Mrs. in front of it, please?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do, with all the others, so that we are consistent.
Are we
on the 11th of May?
No, no, we are on the
10th. Oh, we're on the 10th?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But the same thing applies.
No. The 10th May is fine.
On the second part?
My question on the 10th May would just be for clarification, Chair. I see that for the first time in the minutes, Grace, we have the public entity representatives listed in the minutes. Can we maybe get just an indication if that is standard protocol when we deal with laws or pieces of legislation, then it's fine. But as I was reading this, I just said, why are we mentioning all these people in the minutes only on this one? Because we've never done it on any of our other minutes. That would be my only question on that, Chair.
Honourable Sir.
Chairperson, if we're on the same minutes of the committee room 514, fifth floor, the 10th of May, then I want to put your attention on page 6, where it says, in the middle of the paragraph, in the committee adopted the minutes in their current form with minor amendments. Ms. Van Lingen, Mr. Favre, and Mr. Lond raised their objections. The chairperson emphasized that members present provinces, not their political parties. Now, I made it very clear that day that I did not just represent the party, but at that stage also represented my province by saying that it had to go back to the province, and it was ignored. So I want that amendment to be made, that I said that my province, it did not go to the province as I requested it. It was said that it would have gone back to the province, which was not done. Because of certain things some clarities that was not in the document of the Northern Cape, which we said has to be clarified, and the province did not get that opportunity to clarify it. And I want to put it on record that it must be written in like that. I know there's all the laws out at this stage, but still, in that was my main objection, that my province did not get a chance to react on the clarities that we seek. Thank you, Chair.
But this matter, Honourable Favre, was clarified. I did it this night. I said to you, it was the negotiating mandate. The normal process of the negotiating mandate is that after deliberations in the committee, there's a written report that goes back to the provinces, all the provinces. They got that report, including Northern Cape. And in the Northern Cape part, it was even highlighted what they need to clarify. And they did not do that in the final mandate. So it's not an issue that you differed with what was written. It was an issue that the province had the legitimacy to raise whatever that they wanted to raise. Because that was clarified in the minutes that we sent back to them.
Chairperson, just on a point of order. The Northern Cape Committee did not sit. I know that. I spoke to the members of that committee. Maybe they did receive it from you, but they did not sit to clarify the points. Thank you, Chair.
Then, Honourable Favre, you are raising a new matter.
Yeah.
If it's an issue of the committee, it's not our jurisdiction. It's the provincial legislature's jurisdiction. What?
I'm saying according to what you
say. Yeah, but
they say they did not sit on.
No, I agree. But on our part, we did what was best. Mambele?
No, I just want to raise an order of you dialoguing to each other. We're also part of the meeting. And we were very clear that the communication was done. It was the responsibility of each province to respond to the question. Unfortunately, for the Northern Cape, there is insist on time. That our own committee said before the meeting that cannot be made our responsibility as this committee.
Besides that, do we have any other issue that we want to correct in the minutes, Makoshi?
Thank you very much. I don't know whether the secretary did hear when the Honorable Makua was trying to correct the title, because Mr. Rikhali now is in another office in the province, and here is Mrs. Okay.
I think the same thing applies to the 11th
of May. Yes, and thank you very much for clearing the excitement of the election.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any suggestion for the adoption of the 10th of May minutes?
Chair, my question on the list of public entities, can I get an explanation before I propose?
The explanation, Honorable Chair, was that they have in the past been mentioned. However, this is the minutes of the committee. However, you acknowledge participants that are within the committee. I'm not sure what is your reservation. Probably you can come back on that.
I'm happy with the chair. I propose adoption.
Second, Mamdi Khalid does that. On the 11th of May minutes, we started by correcting title Eha Mamdi Khalid. Is corrected as Mrs. Any other suggestion of amendment or any other thing that you want to raise? Chair,
that person just above Mrs. Ms. Tikhale, can we put a Ms. there as well, please? That's my one. My second one. Are you with me, Chair?
Yes.
My last one is on the final page. The meeting was adjourned at 10. I thought that when I read the email, it was my email that was playing up. But the meeting could not have been adjourned at 10. The last page, the adjournment of the meeting on the minutes of the 11th of May. No, man, you're reading the wrong one.
Chair, if you recall, we had two meetings that day. So we met. I think the time should be corrected because it can't start.
Just put two double O's.
It can't start at 10 and end at 10. Honorable Chair.
Once Honorable Makua descends from the chair and comes here, it becomes Honorable Makua. Once his address as chair from here, he dominates, and that becomes a classist approach. And I have a problem with class. Yeah, they just address one another, you know, properly. Once it's here, it's no longer chair.
I agree with you.
And secondly, this matter of Mrs. is problematic from where I'm sitting. Otherwise, we'll have to check people if they are still Mrs. tomorrow, next week, and next month. And if they're not so, we might have to change to something else. And that becomes personal from where I sit.
Ah, man, Georgie, man, that is the matter principle. You can't change it, man. Makoshi is Mrs. Bihale. It ends there. I've clarified it, Mama. Don't speak on it. And you are a rain queen. George must respect it.
Okay, I'm not a rain queen. A rain queen is the majority one. Yeah, but I really want to say, Chairperson, I know we're still in that excitement that Mpumalanga won. But the chairperson will remain the chairperson as long as he's in this term. It's like the president of the country. If he can come and sit here, you'll always address him as His Majesty, the president. So, and Honorable Mpumia will always be the whip of the committee.
Yeah.
Let's not mix this.
You
can also call me House Chairperson. There's no problem in that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mama. Do we have proposed, Honorable Makuya, you did propose the acceptance of the minutes, right?
No, Chair. The meeting could not have started at 10 and ended at 10.
No, that we agreed that you are going to rectify. Are we having suggestion for the acceptance, Mamdi Khalid?
Honorable Mchimunya agrees.
I am happy that Honorable Mchimunya is not acting like the EFF.
I want to assume that you have the program before you. There is the proposed program before you, members. However, we want to bring your...
I just want to say, Honorable, the caller just also said about the president now, but why don't you with controversy. I just wanted to say, because he also agreed with us apparently that procedural process was not correct. You're not putting a thing here.
If you look at the program before you, members, you would realize that on the 6th of September 2016, we anticipate to be having briefing by the Department of Labor on UIF amendment. Members would know that even before we went for recess. Do you have a program before you, ma'am?
Which one?
Second term committee program.
Third.
Nastins, Honorable Fava is lost. Can you assist?
On my way. I will get it eventually. Okay, second term.
You can use the second term.
It's written second term, but it's actually the third.
It's written third term.
Yeah,
let's say I've got it.
So on the 6th of September 2016, we are anticipating to be dealing with the amendment of the UIF bill. The appeal is that we should be able to be as consultative as possible. What does that mean? That we should be able to have public participation and all the stakeholders should be brought into being. What I want members to assist us with is, in what form do we encourage the participation, Honorable Mchimunya? Do we bring them in the first meeting on the 6th of September here, or do we bring them when we deliberate on the 20th of September?
I am not sure. What 75?
Yeah.
You know, with Section 75 bills, I think the onus in the main lies with the portfolio committee in the NA, especially around issues of consultation. Ours, from where I'm sitting, in my little understanding, is that when it's Section 76, then that becomes a legislative obligation on our part, and is therefore prescribed. I'm not sure on this one whether we want to go a route of the portfolio committee and repeat what the portfolio committee would have done.
I think your assertion is correct, Honorable Timon, that ours, in terms of the Section 76, we are compelled. We have an obligation. However, we are being impressed upon to also look into the issues of consultation. Just so that we satisfy ourselves that there's broader consultation on our part, though it is Section 75. So what we wanted to check with you was the modality thereof. Whether do we do it in the first part, or do we do it when we deliberate? When we deliberate, however, public participation might be limited because we deliberate as honorable members so that we can take a decision. But when we consider the bill there, we can be able to hear what other contending forces on the ground want to say in terms of the deliberation, so that we can then, on the 20th, be able to make an informed response to the bill. I'm not sure if I'm making sense. Though what you are saying, Honorable Timuni, is correct, but there's been an encouragement on our part to also go the route of consultation. What do we do? I suggest that we bring them on the 6th. We extend invitation on the 6th when we get the bill so that they get to know what the bill is and we can be able to take it from there. But if we bring them on the 20th, then members cannot be able to deliberate together with the public interested parties, Honorable Fama.
Okay.
Am I confusing your members?
Not really.
Mom,
not really, Chair. You're not confusing us. But as you are proposing that, one should also focus on the issue of public participation, because it's one of the critical things that we need to do. And thereafter, we deal with us discussing the bill. I think the priority would be the public participation.
Chairperson, since I've been in Parliament from 2009, it's the first time that I see on a Section 75 bill that you want to introduce something like this. I'm not sure about the, I don't want to say the legality about it, but I must be quite honest, I'm flabbergasted by hearing that there will be public participation in the NCOP meeting on a presentation of a 75 bill, specifically on a 75, because should there not be then participation in the National Assembly on the NA presentation? Why on the NCOP one? Because this does not concern provinces as such. So to me, I don't know. Honourable Eddie, maybe you can assist me on that, but I've never come upon it. To me, because it is a 75 bill, then if there should be any type of public representation, to me it should be in the National Assembly on the NA committee and definitely not on the NCOP committee. But that's only my view. I might be wrong. We don't have legal representative here, but that's according to me.
Your assertion is correct, Honorable Farmer. Section 75, we don't take that route. We take that route in Section 76. However, there has been an encouragement to committees that even on the Section 75 bills, we must go that route. Probably let us not be hamstrung by that. Let's consult further and we can be able to communicate with members. But in terms of the structure of the program, do we agree with the program? With an assertion, of course, that we will come back on the issues of consultation. Ma'am Koshi.
Thank you very much. I want to move for the adoption of the program. But I also want to say it's not according to the rules that Section 25 should go to the for consultation. Maybe we can encourage each other to take it to our constituencies on Monday.
Thank you, ma'am. Any second to the adoption of the program? Honorable Father?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Honorable Member?
We have reached the end of our meeting. We anticipated that we are going to be taking something like 30 minutes or 45 minutes to finish. It took longer, I suppose. But however, we finished. Thank you so much for being present today. The meeting is adjourned.
Chairperson, our meeting is scheduled to end at 12.